Welcome to another episode of The Shift with Elaine Agat. In this episode, I chat with Rebecca Scott. She is in the work of making your work suck less with humor and compassion. She does one-to-one individual coaching and really kind of has purposeful conversations with her clients. She is quite an inspiration to listen to. So she went from somebody who wanted to be an English teacher, high school English teacher, and maybe acting in theater, to then go into a nonprofit arts management. And then at that point, her life took an unexpected turn when she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And so we talk really about the ups and downs of life and how, you know, how to make lemonade or vodka soda, as she said in the episode, when life hands you those lemons. So, and really just certain things that were insightful to me is how often as facilitators, as trainers, as leaders and professionals in general, we don't consider people that have physical disabilities and what does that look like to create truly an environment of inclusion in the workplace, inclusion in our communities and so on. So very educational for me, lots of eye-opening moments for me and just self-reflection. So check it out. Let me know what you think.
Rebecca, welcome to the Shift Podcast.
Thank you so much, Elena. I'm glad to be here.
Let's dive right in. Talk to us about your career story. It's one of my favorite ways to start the podcast because I think it's such a beautiful way to just kind of see how people got to where they are today, that education background, that's just like your career trajectory. And, you know, how did you find, you know, the world of leadership and just cultivating these relationships at work and just like what inspired you? Talk to me.
Yeah. So I wish all kids both going into college and getting out of college could listen to the opening of this podcast repeatedly, because I think we have this idea growing up that like we're going to study a thing, we're going to get a job in that thing, and then we're going to do that thing in progressive, greater and greater ways over time. And I don't think that's most people's experience, and it sure as hell is not my experience. So I went to college thinking I would be a high school English teacher. So I studied English, and then I added on theater because I couldn't help myself. I love theater. I acted for a long time, like throughout my young life. And so I graduated and could do everything and nothing, because there are very few job descriptions that say we're looking for somebody with an English and a theater degree. And I had figured out by then I didn't want to teach. So I got a job in nonprofit theater, which was a thrill at the time. I think for me, not so much for my parents, who were like, is she going to be able to make a living? What is going to happen here? But I did make a living as a person in the development office, in the fundraising office, and especially focusing on special events. I figured out pretty quickly that special events were a sweet spot for me. There was something theatrical about them in and of themselves. I got to play hostess, which has like an acting piece to it. And I'm both highly organized, hello Capricorn, and also highly creative. And events allowed me to do both of those things. So like that suited me so well. So I worked in nonprofit theaters for most of my career, except for a brief dark period where I worked for a government relations consulting firm as an executive assistant. And pretty much what that taught me was that I want to stay as far from government as I possibly can. So eventually I landed at the Folger Shakespeare Library here in Washington, D.C., which is a magical place for theater nerds like me and book nerds like me. It has the world's largest collection of Shakespeare materials. It has a world-renowned research library. It has a theater that does wonderful productions of Shakespeare and other work. And it has a museum component. And I got to do everything from order sandwiches for people studying at the library to choosing the linens and plates and glasses for our fabulous galas. And it was wonderful. But a thing happened shortly before I started working at the Folger, which was that I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. As you might know, multiple sclerosis is a degenerative disease. It affects the nervous system. It affects bodies in all sorts of different ways. But the big way it affected mine was mobility. When I got to the Folger, walking just fine, had some other issues below the surface that we don't need to talk about. But generally speaking, nobody could tell there was anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Started walking with a cane eventually, and by the end was using a mobility scooter when I was working long hours at events. And you can't really navigate around 20 10-foot round tables in a room in a mobility scooter. So eventually my body and like my logical skills and everything except my heart said, it's time to stop doing this work. So gradually I started applying for jobs, had no idea what to do because like this really was the thing I figured out that I loved and that I was damn good at. And I found a job at the National Gallery of Art. So hurrah for staying in a prestigious arts organization in Washington, D.C. All of that felt good. And I was working with event software and helping make that software work better for people in the organization. So it's a pretty good match. And I thought maybe I could figure out what the next step was for me based on essentially being an IT person, which felt strange, and it also worked. A year into the job, I had improved things. I had convinced people that yes, they should be using the software that they had been resisting before. And my boss said, good job, Rebecca, we don't need you anymore. And it was a contract position, so this wasn't a shocker, but at the same time, good work. Please go away now. And I thought, okay, so I can do other things. Didn't love this, but it kind of worked. So what else might be out there? So I said, hey, Facebook, what do you think I should do? And I had a handful of people say, oh, send me your resume. And I had coffee with other people. And eventually, my high school advanced placement English teacher, who was the reason I wanted to be a high school English teacher in the first place, sent me a note in Messenger in Facebook and said, hey, you know that leadership consulting firm that I told you about when you visited me a while back? We're expanding a lot and we need an administrator in the United States. Might you be interested? I said, I guess. Because Elena, at the time, and the humor is not lost on me, I thought coaching was a racket. It sounded like BS to me, like somebody who doesn't have a graduate degree is going to talk to you and somehow that's going to improve things. Having been president of many clubs in high school and college, I felt that leaders were born. Surely you can't teach leadership. So like all of my logic bits were like, this doesn't make sense. I can't believe you're going to do this. But my heart said, these people seem really great and they seem to love what they do. Let's give this a try and see what happens. So my very long story is about to wrap up. Here's what happened. That was 6 years ago when I said, all right, let's give this a try. Within 6 months, I had taken two, I think, of the courses in the theory of adult development that Cultivating Leadership, the company, provides. And damn it if I didn't fall in love with this theory that we could grow and change and that there actually were some predictable patterns to how we would grow and change as adults. And the method for teaching and exploring this theory was largely question and answer coaching type techniques that I learned with and from coaches. And there was this little bubble inside of me that said, you know, you really like this. Maybe you stop being an administrator and do this other thing. But I tamped it down. I don't want to hear that. I'm good at this other stuff. Let's forget about any other aspirations. And then, thank heavens, one of the teachers said to me at the end of the third class, Rebecca, I think you're a coach. I think you should apply to Georgetown. And I went back and forth and back and forth, and cut to today, I've had a certificate from Georgetown's Institute for Transformational Leadership for 5 years now. I've been coaching for 5 years. I eventually stopped doing administrative work and now am a colleague and also the gardener of belonging, which we can talk about later, for cultivating leadership. And my life is pretty fabulous. Like, working as a solopreneur who is associated with a wonderful group of people with another company is tough. And I assure you, if I could live the rest of my life as a special event manager who doesn't have mobility issues, I would consider that offer if some demon or angel could make it to me. And like, this is pretty good. Pretty darn good.
I love your story. And I want to go into different pieces of it. So I just made some notes so we can go back to some of the things, because I'm curious what happened. So you were inspired by your English teacher. I want to go back as far as your college.
Yeah.
You were inspired by your English teacher to be a high school English teacher. And then you said you realized you don't want to do that anymore. What changed?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I haven't thought about this in a long time, but here's my best guess. College taught me a lot of things. One thing it taught me is that I'm not a morning person. And that was not the only factor, but that was like a really important practical factor. It taught me that I like making my own schedule, which admittedly you can't do in any 9-to-5 jobs, but I could see that teaching is not just a job, it's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'd really considered that before. And as I realized that, I was like, that's not a lifestyle that I think I want to embrace.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, no, it's just interesting because, you know, we have so many, you know, as kids. For me, I think I remember I'm also very organized, and I loved, I don't know what it was. I loved to, like, I wanted to be a teacher, and I wanted to be like a secretary. I remember I was telling my mom because I wanted to, like, I was really good. Like, I remember I had a desk and I had all my pens and all my notes, and I was like, and I really just wanted to, like, organize things for people. And I was always like cleaning stuff. Like, I don't know. And so I've always wanted to be like a secretary. And it's interesting because then you were like, you know, as you get to know about certain roles and stuff like that, and you're like, well, wait a minute, I don't know if I can make money as a secretary that I'm for the lifestyle I'm looking to have, you know.
Exactly.
Or, you know, like being a teacher, you know, it's the mornings and have to deal with children first thing in the morning, you know, like, you know, that's tough. It's not for everybody. So kudos to people who can do it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we can have a whole other podcast is how teachers are underappreciated, underpaid, and so on.
Oh,
I mean,
my God,
such
yes.
A tough position to be in, such a tough career, but so needed. But anyway, so it's, I'm always curious, like, what changes, you know, for people as they study and as they grow in life, kind of, you know, shows the realities of X, Y, and Z, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit more about, you know, what was it like, I guess, like, what are some things that you have learned about yourself as you were diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and you were, you know, what got you through that diagnosis and to where you were able to kind of push through?
So I was diagnosed 20 years ago. And initially what got me through the diagnosis was crying a lot, talking to people about it. I think a lot of people, when they get diagnosed with something as dramatic as multiple sclerosis, can go inside themselves and maybe not share that piece of themselves with people. I think, thank heavens, I am very open, probably overly open about a lot of things, because by sharing what I was going through initially, just by having conversations with people, I'm hesitating to say this because I spend a lot of time thinking about how much of a burden I am on other people, which again is something else to talk about, but it felt a little bit as if I was taking this like really heavy burden and giving like half pound pieces to other people to hold for me. And because I shared with coworkers, with friends, with family, eventually now I share with people on Twitter and people who read the blog that I eventually started. There was something about saying everything inside me, not everything, but most of what's inside me, and giving it to other people that, it relieved me a little bit of that burden. You know, there's still stuff in here, but it's just a little bit easier to manage with other people looking at it and saying, that's hard.
Yeah, I think just having a support network, you know, whatever one is going through, I think it's essential. And, you know, and I can see how that experience also translates and builds that empathy to be like a probably really good coach, right? Like that's come, you know
that's
what I mean? Like
hope.
I don't think I've ever met a coach who hasn't gone through some kind of adversity, or it usually comes from experience and from wanting to give back and to, you know, share your knowledge, but also be a soundboard to others and so on. So then you've kind of, you know, you build out cultivating leadership. Talk to me a little bit about that journey and, you know, what made you, I guess, at what point did you say, okay, I'm just going to go independently. I want to build this, you know, solopreneur business. Like what was that journey like, and what's been the most rewarding aspects of it and the most challenging as well?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer all of that, but I have to add one more thing that has really been a huge survival tactic for me, and that is sense of humor. If I could not laugh at the absurdity of my day-to-day life, which has ranged from breaking like multiple glasses in a day because I just can't hang on to anything on that particular day, to sure, I'll go there shitting myself, and which is never funny in the moment, never, ever, ever. But a week later, you start to see a little bit of humor, and 2 weeks later, you can tell it so that other people will laugh themselves silly. And that, sense of humor, man, when I can hold on to that, it changes everything.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine.
Yeah. So, so cultivating leadership is an incredible, network of people, coaches and consultants, by and large, international, who do work together, but we're all independent contractors. So Cultivating Leadership was founded by Jennifer Garvey Berger, who was my high school English teacher, Carolyn Coughlin, Jim Wicks, and Keith Johnston, all were living in New Zealand at the time. which is why Jennifer reached out to me to say we need someone in America to do administrative work. And when I joined them as an administrator, I was an independent contractor, but I was on retainer. So I had some security. I knew what my income would be. And I think the two things that were scariest about shifting from being an administrator, having that very specific role, having the regular paycheck coming in, to, all right, now I'm a coach and a facilitator, and I wear a couple of other hats, but like the work comes and goes, and that feels weird. And also, it's new.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hadn't done anything new, maybe since I graduated from college. I mean, that, of course, is an overstatement, but when I was doing new things in administrative roles, in event roles, like it would be, oh, I'm planning this sort of event I've never planned before, but I've got like 50 events behind me. So like I have all of these applicable skills and I know mm-hmm. kind of how to do this. So this is just an offshoot of it. Whereas when I became a coach, there were skills from my past I could certainly apply, but at the same time, this was very new territory. And as a former overachiever, and you know, I still have those impulses, but I don't achieve like I used to. Being brave enough to suck at something, or at least be like less than awesome at something,
mm-hmm.
is a big deal.
Yeah.
So stepping into coaching and facilitating meant accepting uncertainty in terms of what my income would be in a year, when that income would come in any month, and all of those sorts of things. And accepting the uncertainty of, I don't really know how this thing's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot.
Yeah. Scary.
Mm-hmm.
But you're here.
But I'm here.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I've never thought of this before. So, I mean, I'm already excited to be in this conversation, but like this realization is actually kind of cool that living with an illness that can be so different day to day has maybe helped me build up some resilience and like some unintentional bravery to be able to do what I'm doing and to have taken that step. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how life turns out, you know, and it's interesting mm-hmm. how, and you know, in the beginning you said coaching is just like, what is coaching? Like, who are these people? Like, what are they trying to do? You know? And to be fair, there are people that fall into that category. So you're not wrong.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
But you know, but also coaching, you know, is a lot of other things, but it's interesting how it turned out. And now you've been in this for a number of years. So I think mm-hmm. it's pretty fascinating how life turns out.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of it is that mindset that you were talking about, right? Is like,
mm-hmm.
you know, making lemonade, so to say, and you
yeah.
made the fruit juice and lemonade and all sorts of things.
I did. I like to say vodka tonics.
There you go. Yeah, I'll take a tequila and lime. So yeah, it's pretty impressive, you know. And it's just and that's what I appreciate about stories, you know. And mm-hmm. that's why I have this podcast, because just hearing people's stories is so impactful and interesting and unique. And and to your point, like, you know, I wish everybody would listen to it, just to show how, you know, you went from being a high school teacher to, you know, life throwing your curveballs to then now doing your own thing, and you know, and like recreating yourself essentially, right? Like mm-hmm. like changing careers, which is difficult to do on its own, let alone change career into a solopreneur. So it's interesting to think how life unravels, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I usually think of unravel as like such a negative thing. Like if your sweater unraveled, you'd probably be pretty upset about it. And yet I don't know, like sometimes that unraveling could lead you with, or leave you with yarn that you could do something even cooler with. And that,
Yeah.
well, that's.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit more about the work that you do specifically around kind of belonging, right? Purposeful conversations. Like, talk to me a little about those concepts and how do you work within the space?
Yeah. So I often refer to what I do as a coach is having purposeful conversations to, my official line is to make work suck less, which I, as my coaching training went on, I was like, that's what I'm in this for, is to make work suck less. And I think I really focused on work initially because, and there are some great life coaches in the world. I do know that this is true. And for whatever reason, I just felt like, oh no, life coaching, that's like, you know, sparkly stickers and good job. And oh, you know, it's every rain leads to rainbows, which leads to a pot of gold. And, you know, I've been telling my story today and there's a voice in the back of my head saying, Rebecca, you sound like, you know, you're spinning everything positively. And I firmly believe that we should find positivity and good things whenever we can. And a lot of life just sucks. So I was like, if I focus on work, that will show that I'm serious and that I'm not about hearts and rainbows and all of that. And the more I've coached, the more I've realized life coach, leadership coach, like if you can separate those things cleanly, good on you, but I don't know a lot of people who can. So I think my goal now is to have purposeful conversations with people so that they can see themselves and their worlds more clearly and make those worlds suck less in whatever way they can. And the belonging piece of things, I kind of stumbled. Whenever I say I stumbled into things, I have to pause and acknowledge that that is an especially silly thing for a person with MS who has balance issues to say. I stumble into absolutely everything. But I stumbled into belonging work in part being the only physically disabled person in my company. Now, everybody in the world probably has some little bit of disability, and we're all going to grow increasingly disabled as we age. If you're able-bodied, congratulations, it's temporary. But as a at least youngish presenting woman who walks with a rollator, I get some funny looks, and I experience frustrations with stairs in places, and even being involved with facilitation from my wonderful colleagues who are the most thoughtful people, but who in the middle of programs for 300 people would say, okay, everybody stand up, without thinking, oh, wait, some people can't stand up. I probably should offer an option for them. So that is how that work began, was waving my shaky hand and saying, hey, actually, when you say stand, it reminds me that I am not like everyone else here. And that kind of stinks. It's not the biggest issue in the world. I know you haven't done it on purpose. And it's actually kind of fun coming up with other alternatives for folks in those situations. So that got me thinking, hey, this is an area that I care about and that I really want to bring joy to. I feel like so many things around diversity, inclusion, belonging can be so heavy, can be about what folks are doing wrong. And you absolutely need to face and acknowledge the things that are going wrong. But again, figuring out how to make things go a little better can be fun. You can learn a lot. You can connect with each other in a different, better way. And I think that's really exciting work. So I do some work around that. Again, I always tell people in cultivating leadership, and I extend this to anyone watching or listening, like if you are thinking, does this pass the test for all bodies? And that can also include things like the deaf community, the blind community. Like there's so many things to consider. And even if all you do is on your intake sheet say, is there anything we can do to make this easier for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yay! You've done a thing. You've done more than so many other people have.
Yeah. You know, I'm a facilitator myself, of course, as you know, and I think that was this moment was like a slight, a little self-awareness for me, because I'm like, I don't think I've ever, like, unless I see it, like, unless I recognize, I might say, okay, maybe I won't say that. But in a room of like 300 people, like you said, like if I do large presentations, you know, it's such a good point. Then again, there's no ill intent, obviously, for that. It's just like, it's just that awareness. And I think, and you know, so I appreciate the work that you do, because I think we don't always know. And we, you know, it's a, I don't know if it's an ignorant thing or whatever you want to call it, but it is a, like an unawareness, lack of awareness. And unless you're in that space, so it's a good point, because I actually have presentations coming up, but now I'm like, oh, like I really need to consider this. And I never considered it. I never, I probably should have, but I just didn't. You know, unless I see with my eyes, like somebody with, you know, who has a physical disability or something like that, I'll be more mindful of things I say, obviously, but in a large presentation space, I think it's, you know, it's something definitely to, or even like certain things you cannot see even, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, so there's so many things you can see. So it's, I think it's an excellent point you're making. I think it's so helpful, like as a, whoever is a facilitator or trainer or just, you know, presenting, it's an excellent point to remember.
I'm always, always, always happy to talk to people about this. Mm. When I started my blog, stumbler.blog, which will be in the show notes. I initially did it for that unburdening that we were talking about, but also because, as I said, I share a lot. I sometimes overshare. And I felt like people in the MS community were not talking about the things that could really happen, like shitting yourself, like troubles in the bedroom, like these big human things that can really affect quality of life that folks weren't talking about. So I thought, okay, I'm writing this to help people with MS. They're going to find this blog and they're going to be so glad somebody's being honest. And what I've found over time is that I think the biggest change for my blog, which probably is pretty small, let's be honest, but still is in the attitudes and outlook of people who have been fortunate enough not to encounter a lot of disability in their lives. I can tell you very little makes me as happy, sad as people saying, oh, Rebecca, I went to this event and you couldn't have gotten in. Like the setup was terrible. And, you know, I'd prefer people think of me for my brilliant, witty comments and stunning good looks. But you know what? If it's helping them notice when things aren't accessible to folks, I'll take it.
It's, I mean, we don't know what we don't know. And it's, again, I think it's just that awareness piece, you know? So I think the fact that you're putting some of that educational stuff out there, I think it's important because we just don't know. And I'm curious, like, you know, so I can see definitely how you know, for individual level, like that's super helpful to have that conversation, to have that support and community. Mm-hmm. What about for organizations? Like, what is some work you do around that? Like facilitation is one piece, like maybe accessibility. What are the things that are like it's should be common sense, but it's not. And you know, you're like, how did you not think about, like, you look at organizations or whatever it is, virtual, in person, and you're like, how do you not know this? What are some of the biggest mistakes, I guess, or oversights that people make with when it comes to, you know, neglecting these considerations?
Oh, interesting. I think the biggest thing, and this applies across all sorts of difference out there, but having the humility to own it when you've been wrong. So whatever the mistake is, if you've used language that you know, used to be okay, but much of the world realizes now, oh, that's less appropriate, and you just haven't caught up to that, or you slip, whatever it might be, having the humility when the aha moment comes, or when somebody forces the aha moment on you, to say, oh, I've done the thing. So there's an acronym that I love that my colleagues Vernissa and Akasha taught me. It's ROAR. So when something happens, you recognize it, you own it. You don't say, oh, I'm sorry if you were offended. You just say, I am sorry. See, now I'm going to mess this up. Okay. Recognize, own, apologize. Okay. I'm sorry, and repair. Mm-hmm. How can I make this up to you? Or if you have thoughts on how I can make it up to you. I have never been a part of like going into an organization and saying, you know, we're going to fix your DEI or anything like that. And I think lots of organizations are great at that. Jennifer Brown and her company are wonderful at that sort of thing. But what I am good at is having one-on-one conversations with people about their past and their present and figuring out how they want to grow. And that's true in reaching across difference. That's true in folks living in bodies that are doing stuff that they'd really rather the bodies didn't do. Mm-hmm. And it's true for all sorts of people. I think we all can benefit from that. I certainly do with my coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's humility is a big thing, you know, and it's I think in all aspects, you know, and I think that ROAR can apply to personal relationships, to the workplace. And I think if we can just generally have a little bit more humility and just like own up to our own bullshit, our own you know, like just not knowing, like ignorance, because I think we all have, you know, again, I don't think it's ill-intended in most cases, but I think there is, you know, but that's why conversations and stories, again, you know, make such an impact, because you don't know, you know, what other people are going through. And I've always been such a fan of the quote of like, you know, be kind to everybody, because you don't know whatever everybody's dealing with. Like, you really don't know. And we assume so much. And we're also, I mean, honestly, like from my perspective, like sometimes you feel uncomfortable you're like, you don't want to offend. So sometimes even being afraid to say the wrong thing or ask the wrong question when it comes to sensitive topics, or maybe they're not even sensitive. Maybe it's just an assumption you're making. Maybe it's you're the one who feels sensitive about it, but other people actually are, it's pretty normal, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think there's just a lot of that. And in the world of social media where, you know, every word is picked and you know, and then if you, God forbid, you say something wrong or et cetera, somebody's going to take that little piece and they're going to, you know, throw it out of context and so on. So I think there's a lot of that that doesn't help us wanting to, you know, build these connections and, you know, mm-hmm. cultivate those relationships and, you know, regardless of whatever differences we may have. So I think that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah, it's interesting how you both need to be courageous and humble,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think are things we think of as going together, but it's true. It takes a lot of courage
mm-hmm.
to put yourself out there and try to have hard conversations with people.
Yeah.
You just, you know, if you stuff it up, you need the humility to say, okay, I did that. I'm going to do better.
Hmm. And where's this wonderful blog? I know I'm going to include it on the show notes, but aside from you said you shared on Twitter, where else mm-hmm. do you hang out at virtually?
Yeah. So I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. Twitter is probably the place I'm most active because there are a lot of people in the MS community still on Twitter. I would love to be, you know, ethical and storm off from it, but I've got a real community there. I've met some lovely, lovely, supportive people. I am also on Facebook and Instagram. On Twitter and Instagram, I am ScoreBecca. And my blog is stumbler.blog. So Stumbler is like Tumblr without the E. But with an S at the start.
Nice. Yeah. I'll make sure to put all that in the show notes for people who are listening and maybe just mm-hmm. want to refer back to it. And the last question I ask all of my guests, what is one question mm-hmm. you wish people would ask themselves more often?
So to stay on brand, I'm going to phrase it one way and then I'll phrase it differently. So the on-brand version is, what little thing can I do to make things suck less?
Mm.
Which, to phrase differently, is just like, how can I make life, work, my morning routine, dinner prep, any of these things a little bit better? And I think people think about improving things a lot. And I also think that we all, myself included, I am the biggest, if it comes to exercise, like I just want to be big goals. And if I don't do the big goal, forget it. I'm never exercising again. But when we make these things little, we usually can do them. They usually have a bigger impact than we think. And sometimes they're even sustainable. So yeah, what little thing can you do to make things better?
Mm-hmm. Or to make things suck less. I like that one
and
better.
Suck
I like that,
less.
I like that version better. We'll stick to that one.
All right.
I love it. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Elena. This has been enlightening.